everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Podcast. First and foremost, follow me on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod, Facebook, and that should do it. More importantly, Booktopia. If you're in the business of buying a book, be it a sports book or a cookbook or whatever it may be, use the link in the description and go ahead and buy that. Some of the proceeds go to the show. Now, let's jump straight into it. NBL 21 has a start date. It's going to run from December 3rd to late April, which is interesting. So starting 2 months later or thereabouts and then finishing at a similar time. So it's going to be a condensed schedule, how that's going to work. I've asked the league and they don't know. It's very, very interesting. Be very good to see the schedule. That means there is 155 days until NBL basketball, if you're counting at home. I wrote this on Twitter, but I'll reiterate it here as well. With that start date of December 3rd, does it help or hinder a Bogut return? I guess that's the only real question still up in the air, other than a few opt-outs at Sydney and a few other things, is with this date, does that help Bogut? Does it hinder Bogut? The Tokyo Olympics would be approximately 2 months after the conclusion of the NBL season, or NBL 21. Is that enough turnaround for a 35, 36-year-old seven-footer like Bogut to, if he wants to, make the push into a Boomers squad and the training and then the tournament? I don't know. Next question coming off that December 3rd start date is, will the NBL, play more open-air games to be able to circumnavigate indoor COVID distancing restrictions? Could we see more open-air games in an attempt to crowd in more people because it's more air? Again, don't know. Third question I had was, the remodeling of the CCC, the Cairns Convention Centre, does this date help that? Has that been stopped? I've found reporting on that hard to come by, but nonetheless. Let's jump on the TBT. There's been a bit of news of late. Jayshon Tate testing positive for COVID, but let's come back to that later. 5 days' time. Well, 4 days' time. July 4th, because that's July 4th in the US, July 5th here. It'll be on ESPN, and that is when the first round of 24 commences. There's a round of 24. Some teams have already because of their reputation, gone through the round of 16. I just want to again reiterate in the TBT that NBL players to keep an eye on, past and present, to watch. DJ Kennedy is playing for the Overseas Elite. They've already committed or been skipped through to the round of 16. He was formerly of Melbourne United. Tramell Darden is on a team called the Money Team. Tramell Darden, nearly 40 years old, former South Dragon from way back, teaming up with Jacob Wiley, former Adelaide 36er, is also on that team. Casper Ware's going to this thing, Team Challenge ALS. Eric Devendorf, who played for Melbourne many moons ago, is playing for Boheim's Army. And Eric Griffin is playing for Team Hines, former Adelaide 36er of last year. Jayshon Tate, well, just tested positive for COVID, has had 3 or 4 positive tests. They're still not ruling him out of the tournament, but it seems likely. He'll play for a team called Big X. And then the team that I like, Armour Athlete, they've got Scott Machado, John Robertson, and Tarico White all in the one team. That's Armour Athlete. They were going to have Bryce Cotton. Can you imagine a team of Cotton, Machado, Robertson, Tarico White? That would have been fun. But nonetheless, we get those three. And it's going to be really interesting to see if Tate plays. Is he as good as people say? I want to see what he does in continued long minutes outside of that Kings egalitarian rotation that they had. I want to see him play big, solid minutes. Has he got that kind of puff? Can he contribute and put up performances in the time given? That's what I'm looking for. Most importantly, though, Tarico White. Has he got his feet back under him? He was clearly injured last year. I think, has he got his feet under him, or is that his game now? It remains to be seen. And John Robertson, I'm interested to see this guy, what he can do in an Elam-ending atmosphere. We saw him, you know, blow that game out in Cairns. He's a really interesting thing. And then the two of them in the backcourt, Machado and Robertson, is that going to work? Very interesting. For NBA fans, Hatheem Thabeet is in this thing. Joe Johnson, a few other NBA players. Tim Scarborough, he's a TBT analyst working with ESPN, is predicting ALS to win. That's Casper Ware's team to win it, so maybe they do. No NBL players will be playing off against one another in the initial round of 24, but they would. That would change in the round of 16. I'll keep you posted. Going to be following that TBT rather closely and stay here for it. Let's jump on. So with this episode, now that those two things have gone, I want to address a few things that were on NBL Overtime last night. If you watched it, NBL Overtime, they had Dean Vickerman on. It made it pretty clear to me, and I'm reading between the lines here, but from that interview with Dean Vickerman, it became clear to me that United weren't really entertaining much of an interest in re-signing Trimble or Long. They were quick to go elsewhere, and I just got the impression that they'd been told, thank you for the season, but we're not looking to re-sign you. You can aggressively approach other leagues and other teams. It seems that they signed off quickly, and you know, again, just my impression, no talk. The other thing they were talking about was Chris Golding. CG43, surveying European options? Really? Has the ship sailed on that? He's 31, 32 years old. This is his last chance to secure a 2 to 3 year deal, maybe longer, that secures him up through the uncertainty of his early 30s. You look at what Scott Machado's done in that rumored Cairns deal that was on the table for a couple of years. It just makes sense guys at that age want to lock down, say, 3 years and know they've got a home until they start hitting the soft tissue twilight years, and at least they're solid 3 year, you know, long-term contracts to see them through their older subprime. So the fact that they're, you know, chasing European offers, I don't buy it. However, the lack of interest or seeming lack of interest in Long and Trimble certainly shows United are committed to Golding. They're bringing him back. It's there right now. The agent is just playing one off the other by the sound of it, making him sweat. You look at, and Golding is represented by Lighthouse Sports, Daniel Moldovan. Their stable of talent have all pushed up on the system this offseason, from Hodgson, who opted out, then back in. Xavier Cooks is another one of their clients. Cam Glidden. They've also got Mitch McCarron, who opted back in, but was, you know, dicey for a while. So they're an aggressive agency, seemingly. It'd be interesting to see how this one goes. But the idea that Chris Golding, all of a sudden at this age now, is going to try Europe, timeline just seems odd to me. But hey, you at home, you've got a brand on your shoulders, you know what's going on. Vickerman's comments on Casey Prather didn't fill me with the greatest confidence that they are all in with him. There was a lot of, we're going to test his health and see if he can get through the grind. I get a sense that there's a hopefulness that he won't pass those tests. They can get off his contract and look to bring in someone else. You know, they're obviously looking to recruit big, and they want to recruit probably top and tail. And Prather kind of handcuffs them a little bit, especially with Golding about, who they seem to want to push all in with. Over Twitter, Adelaide have opted out of Jerome Randall's deal, saying that, you know, he's hurt and a long way back from recovery. Randall then said the opposite to that, so that's an interesting situation. One thing that keeps coming up is, like, everyone talks about these Illawarra Hawks young guns. I see guns, well, sort of, but I don't see much young guns. I mean, Sunday Dech, 26, 27 years old, prime. That's not young. That's not Emmett Nah, 25, 26. That's not young. They're prime, fractionally subprime. And then you got Froling, Greeter, and Glover, 21 to 22 years old. Okay, they're young guns, but not one of those three started. Glover came on quite nicely, but the other two, they're not. I don't like this idea that they're pushing in these young guns things. They're not young. They're in their prime. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it now. So, you know, they're two guys looking for minutes. I don't know why. Keanu Pinder getting NBL interest, son of Tiny Pinder. If he doesn't sign with the Wildcats, I'd be pretty surprised. Not because of any ephemeral connection to the team or holistic father-son rule. Just because I think he means the most to that team if Kay were to depart. And I think the only reason they haven't put pen to paper is they're waiting to see what Kay's going to do. Liam Santamaria himself said that, you know, Nick Kay is pushing into Europe, and that's genuine. I find that hard to believe, but I certainly believe Liam on these things. But going back to Pinder, I just think Perth is the best fit for him, because there's the space for him if Kay leaves, and also Perth typically pay the most, which is pretty handy. Keanu Pinder, another Lighthouse Sports managed NBL player. Let's, while we're talking about Perth Wildcats, I wanted to have a quick dissection of Wildcat basketball. Probably should have mentioned these topics at the start of the show for a bit of a taste, but I didn't. Wildcat basketball, we hear it all the time, we're going to play Wildcat basketball. Perth are going to play Wildcat basketball. What is Wildcat basketball? You know, I find it really strange. I'm not a big believer in locker room presence and, oh, he just dug deep, they want it more. I'm a big believer in talented teams win and talentedly strategic teams win as well. But as it pertains to Wildcat basketball, so I've always just thought the Wildcats were really good because they had really good imports. Imports are what make this league. People seem afraid to admit that or unwilling to admit that, but I think it's the truth. And I went back, and over the last 20 NBL MVPs, 11 have been imports. Of those nine that weren't, one was Paul Rogers, who arguably it could have gone to Ricky Grace, but nonetheless, Paul Rogers. And then the other one was Kevin Lish, who won it when he was naturalized with Illawarra, but was a former import. So you kind of could push this number anywhere to 13, but as it stands in the record book, 11 of the 20 MVPs have been imports. 10 of the last 20 Larry Sengstock medalists have been imports. Now, how does this relate to the Wildcats? Well, the Wildcats have won 10 championships. 1990, 91, 95, 2000, 2010, 2014, 2016, 17, 19, 20, chasing a third. And I look at that list and I go, that's interesting. 2000 to 2010, no championships. Grand finals, but no championships. And I look at kind of who their steadying influence is in those times. Between 90 and 95, they have Ricky Grace, arguably one of the better players ever in the NBL. 2000, they have Paul Rogers. 2010, they have Lish, not an MVP, but a future one. 2014, they have James Ennis, one of the more athletic and stupidly crazy players we've ever seen in the NBL. 2016 is the odd year out, no MVP, and only Matt Knight, who was NBL's second team. They did, however, have Casey Prather, who was arguably MVP but suffered through an injury and was the team's best player. And then of late, we're now in the Bryce Cotton era, who's not only the best player for the Wildcats and not only an import, but you know an MVP and a stupid, embarrassingly good talent for the league. So if we digest it back and we go back to 2000, what happened between 2000 and 2010? Were Perth playing Wildcat basketball then, or did they somehow drop the bundle? It's a 10-year championship whiff for a team that is routinely always there. So my question to you out there is, were they playing Wildcat basketball from 2000 to 2010? Were they playing Wildcat basketball from 1990 to 2000? Did they stop between the 2000s and 2010, other than making the grand final in 2003 and losing to the Sydney Kings? Between 2000 and 2010, it's Longley and Vlahov who are the owners. Boomers. The Midas touch of the Boomers, but we'll come back to that. The team isn't playing Wildcat basketball because they can't find the talent. Between 2000 and 2010, Rob Feaster is the longest-serving import. He goes on to play 60 games. I don't know if they're all with the Wildcats. Other than that, there's a real revolving door of imports. You've got Rashad Tucker coming in, David Bailey, who's kicked off the team for testing positive to marijuana. Darren Brooks plays a season. Isaiah Victor plays a season. Darnell Hinson. Ontario Lett plays 18 games. And then the import who I've had on this podcast in the past, if you want to go back and listen, Rashad Phillips. They have an import who plays 6 games for this team. The bottom line, between 2000 and 2010, although Ricky played some of it, they couldn't replace Ricky Grace once he was gone. They couldn't replace their import talent, who was an NBA talent guard who turned down the NBA for either convenience or situation. Does that ring any bells? What I'm getting at is there is always an element of luck with these things. I don't even think the Wildcats would be upset if I said that there's always luck with these things. Landing a Ricky Grace, landing a Cotton, the two absolute linchpins of their franchise, there's a huge element of luck there and situation and timing. In 2007, Jack Bendat buys the team. What happens when he's not around anymore? Will they still be able to play Wildcat basketball? Are Perth actually playing Wildcat basketball, or are they playing Bendat basketball? I was listening to a speech by David Foster Wallace. He's an author of that book, Infinite Jest. It's really popular. And he told a joke about how an old fish says to two young fish, "Morning boys, how's the water?" And the two younger fish say, "What the hell is water?" And what he was getting at with that is important realities are often the ones that are the hardest to see and talk about. That's why I come back to Wildcat basketball. I think this term is thrown around, Wildcat basketball, that its meaning is almost distorted. Its important reality has been forgotten, just like those two young fish. With that parable in mind, Here's my important and grounded and real definition of Wildcat basketball, my important reality of what Wildcat basketball is. And call me cynical if you wish. Perth, scout the best imports. Pay them well and long term. Let's not forget that. Treat them well and never, ever, ever get overly sentimental. This team has cut players, payments. You know, it's a brutal team. Look at the finals. Kings won out of the finals. The Wildcats would play the NBL finals on the surface of the moon. They don't care. Just even this season or the start of NBL 20, at the start of the season, people were saying, how will the Wildcats win without assistant coach Matt Nielsen, who left? I say BS. I'm sure he was a fine assistant coach, but he's not one of the major ingredients of Wildcat basketball. Talking about him was a distraction to the important reality, a sentimental one. And of course, don't forget the fact that he was a boomer. The mention of a boomer is like mentioning he who shall not be named in Harry Potter. It's got such a brevity to it. But, you know, people forgot the important reality that, no, this team wins because they have Bryce Cotton. It's like Christopher Walken in Catch Me If You Can. He asks his son, Frank Abagnale or Leonardo DiCaprio, why do the Yankees always win? And Frank gives the correct answer. He says, the Yankees win because they have Mickey Mantle. And Christopher Walken replies, no, it's because people can't stop looking at those damn pinstripes. In a way, it's the con man giving the real advice, and it's a total fake. No, it's not. Matt Nielsen's not the reason why the Wildcats are going to win or lose. It's going to be Bryce Cotton or Ricky Grace is the reason why they lose, along with some other players as well. Wildcat basketball is about to get really tested with Tarico White and Nick Kay. Can they afford to pay Nick Kay and bring him back? But more importantly, with Tarico White, especially if Nick Kay doesn't re-sign. If Kay doesn't re-sign, will they bring back Tarico White? That's the sort of all-for-one, one-for-all Perth Wildcat basketball thing to do. Will they do it? Or will they look at the team's needs and go and get something else? Has Tarico White done enough to deserve coming back? I say yes. But we're going to see. I'm watching the Perth Wildcats here. We're going to see if this kitten's got claws or not. I'm really excited to see how they're going to put their team together. Winning is paramount to Wildcat basketball. I don't begrudge them that. After all, it's working pretty well. That was that. I don't particularly like that segment, but whatever. You've got to talk about something in these lean times. Andrew Bogut has been in the news recently. I wanted to do a bit more of a retrospective of his career, both NBA and his short time in the NBL. I saw a couple articles online. Most are just, you know, oh, great player and great touch, and oh, he's such an ambassador for Australian basketball, which is all true. But I thought I'd go into his career a little bit more and have a talk about it. I saw Andrew Bogut on a podcast recently, The Butterfield Effect. And definitely check it out. And what was interesting about that conversation, or the question that I most wanted to ask Andrew Bogut after listening to it, was he was saying how the mindset of US sports is very individual, and Australian sports is more community-based, you know, the motif of sports over here. So my question here would be, the US individual sports motives or construction versus the more community-minded sports mentality in Australia, what's better, what's worse, and what's more financially viable? That'd be a question. That was a big question that I got coming out of that conversation. But let's look at Andrew Bogut specifically. Bogut, he's taken first in that 2005 draft. My estimation is he's probably the third best player in that draft, or the player with the third best career. Chris Paul, and I think Deron Williams, arguably. Neither of those have rings. But actually, Bogut probably had a better career than certainly Deron Williams, but I don't think Chris Paul was a really good player. But as far as talent goes, I think those two are just fractionally above him. And I don't think that's any slight. Andrew Bogut, 13 seasons, 706 games played, of which he started 661 of them. So he played in 706 games of a possible 1,066 games. He played in 66% of the possible games available to him. He missed, 34% of his games, over a quarter. It's a lot with injury. His career tallies, 9.6 points per game, 8.7 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, 28.1 minutes per game. The guy to compare him to is obviously, if you're talking about Australian basketball players, is Luke Longley. Longley plays for 11 seasons, plays in 567 games, starts 362 of them. So plays in, so of a possible 902 games, he plays in 63. So seeing, you know, there's a 3% differential in their availability for games, pretty similar. Longley's averages are similar, but less. 7 points a game, 5 rebounds, a block, 21 minutes. That's the big one. Bogut plays, you know, 7 more minutes per game over his career. That's essentially a quarter almost. Big difference. And, you know, Bogut obviously had those horrible years tacked onto the end of his career. So yeah, it's comfortable to say he's eclipsed Longley in that. As far as pure talent, you know, 3 rings and play with the Bulls is its own highlight. But as far as, you know, self-made players, I think Bogut stands atop of Longley. Bogut's best season comes in 2009-10 when he is named All-NBA third team. His team, the Milwaukee Bucks at the time, go 46-36, sixth in the East. This is a team that's got Michael Redd, John Salmons, Brandon Jennings, Carlos Delfino, Ersan Ilyasova. Funnily enough, Bogut makes All-NBA third team that year, but is not named an All-Star in the East and is never named an All-Star in his career, despite being in that center spot that kind of works well for a lot of players who are a bit dodgy making it into the All-Star game. But he never gets there. This is the same season. The same season he's named All-NBA third team. It's the season he breaks his arm terribly from the fall. And I've always wondered, did Bogut harbor any resentment towards Amari Stoudemire for what looked like a wee bit of a push in the back? Let's fast forward to 2012, where Bogut is traded out of the Bucks, along with Steven Jackson, to the Golden State Warriors for Monta Ellis, Ekpe Udoh, and Kwame Brown. So I don't know about that haul for the Bucks. The move, not so much Bogut, but the move is booed on arrival. There's that famous footage of the owner trying to talk over the boos. Bogut arrives in Golden State, where his career is framed. You know, that's the image we have of him. The Bogut-Mark Jackson relationship is a very, very interesting one. Bogut hurts his shoulder one time, and I forget which year. Well, Jackson's last year, which is, what, 2015? Bogut hurts his shoulder, and Mark Jackson says something like this in the press. He says, he didn't hurt it on court, in practice, or a game. He could have hurt it in his sleep. Bogut takes this personally and replies that Jackson's comments are absolutely ridiculous. The two seemingly hate each other. By most reports, they dislike each other, and most quotes, they dislike each other. After he's been fired, I think is a fair way to put it, Mark Jackson is saying on an ESPN commentary of a Cavs-Warriors game that, or maybe it was a Mavs game, can't recall, rim protection is overrated and the Warriors don't miss Bogut. Bogut replies saying, take everything that Jackson says with a grain of salt. This is the quote I find most poignant between their relationship. When asked if he, Bogut, still has a relationship with Jackson, Bogut replies, no way. Furthermore, I haven't heard from him since his firing, in parentheses. I know he keeps in touch with some of the guys on the team, but I'm kind of in a different crowd, I think. I found that a really interesting quote, and the part I like is the I think. And I think the I think means he's talking about religion. When he says, I'm in a different crowd, I think. And I think Mark Jackson, if you recall, was sort of a, more than a coach, he was a congregation leader. He had that real kind of Eddie Murphy in Vampire in Brooklyn, if you're familiar with that film, where he's this sort of, you know, gospel leader of the team. I didn't think he was a particularly good X's and O coach, and fittingly, the season after he leaves, they win. But, you know, rallied those guys. So, very religious coach. I wonder how that went with Bogut. I know a lot of people would have disliked that, being sort of preached to rather than coached. Moving ahead in the timeline, but after the finals win, Iguodala is interviewed, Andre Iguodala, the finals MVP that year. And the first things out of his mouth is, he's asked a question about the game by Doris Burke, but Iguodala's response is, first of all, God is great. And I want to thank all the chaplains across the NBA. He goes on to describe Steph Curry and says, Steph is a God-fearing man. This is really openly flaunting religion on a national network in the United States. Kind of crazy. Mark Jackson, let's go back in the timeline. He's fired in 2014. The Warriors win the title in the 14-15 NBA championship. Bogut gets his championship ring measured for his middle finger. The next year, they lose in the finals after going 73-9 and having a 3-1 series advantage. There's injuries. Bogut gets hurt, doesn't play in game 6 and 7. Warriors lose the series to the Cavs. Not a great, interesting series. Great for the Cavs fans and LeBron. Amazing comeback. After that series, Bogut is traded. Well, Bogut and a second round pick is traded from the Warriors to the Mavericks for only a second round pick in return. So they give up a second and Bogut and only get a second rounder back. It must hurt being traded for so little to allow the cap to sign Kevin Durant. Bogut later says of the trade, this is when he's with the Mavericks, and when he talks about the trade, and the sources say marked criticisms of his durability while in Golden State. So in comment to people saying sources say the Warriors were getting irritable with his lack of availability, Bogut says, this league is so two-faced and everybody is so fake. The same people who made those comments will see me tomorrow and shake my hand and ask how my family is. Furthermore, this league is full of people who are full of shit and shallow, and that's what you figure out in pro sports. Wow. Explosive comment. Is he right? Is he wrong? Doesn't matter. It's what he thinks. It's with these comments in mind that I was so surprised to see Bogut return to the Warriors at the end of the 2019 NBL series. Or season. I was very, very surprised to see that. Going back in the timeline, under 1 minute, he leaves Golden State, leaves Mavericks, winds up on the Cavs. 56 minutes into his career with the Cavs, he breaks his leg. And effectively and sadly, his NBA career is kind of over and dead. So, to that point, he's not a starter anymore. And while he goes back after doing that season with the Kings, it's not there. But then he comes to the NBL. Has a great first year with the Kings. I think people kind of forget how good he was in that first year. I know it was recent history. It was only 2 years ago. People kind of forget how good he was in that season and how much he played. He wins MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. 11.4 points per game. 57% from the field. 11.5 rebounds per game. 30 minutes per game. So he's playing 3/4 of the minute of the game. He doesn't miss a single game either. And it's a great season for him individually. I mean, the team is a mess under Andrew Gaze and Jerome Randall. They still win 18-10, I think. But they're really no hope to push for the championship. Quick departure from Andrew Bogut. Just on that semifinal series, a lot of talk about Casper Ware. In that semifinal series, NBL 19, Sydney Kings versus Melbourne United, when Casper Ware was still with United, Jerome Randall got smoked by Casper Ware. Randall, in the two games that semifinal, was it went a combined 6 of 28 from the field for 15 points, 6 assists, 5 turnovers. Casper Ware, his direct opponent, two games combined, he went 17 of 33 from the field for 55 points, 8 assists, only 1 turnover. I mean, that is as big a, as lopsided a performance as you'll ever see. So people thinking, give up on Casper Ware, not just yet. But going back to Andrew Bogut, revenge and anger are the things that permeate hit from his career. And I don't think I'm alone in saying that. It's a reoccurring theme both in the NBA, in the NBL, and internationally. And there is an interesting video on YouTube by a guy by the name of the NBA Storyteller about the sort of the story of Bogut's career and his NBA legacy. That video is a little bit overcritical for me and a little bit sort of snipey, but definitely worth a look. NBA Storyteller is that one. And when I say this idea of, you know, flare-ups and whatever, 2004, Boomer's campaign in Athens, under outside pressure going into the NBA draft, he cusses out and walks off from the Boomer's team before returning and apologizing. That's most important to remember. Did apologize and return. You know, young kid under pressure, we all get that. He's traded from the Bucks without incident, and for according to some reports, or most reports, he was delighted with the trade, happy to leave the Bucks, and it was mutual. But obviously traded from Golden State. We have all the above quotes where he didn't particularly like that. The FIBA World Cup lost to Spain. We have the storming off the court, the Google where fucking FIBA headquarters is, match fixing, rubbing the fingers together. You know, after the Kings withdrawal from the finals due to coronavirus, we have the Bush League shots at Kesselman in the league. Not to mention the hurtful back and forths with homicide on occasion, the jibes at China over Twitter, which I think are terribly overblown. by both camps, but predominantly... I don't want to say anything foul. I think it's fair to say that Bogut is untouchable in Australian media circles. It's sort of the bliss of the boomer's kiss. You can't be critical of a boomer unless their names are Sobey and Glidden. Going back to that boomer's bliss, you know, we talked about Matt Nielsen, assistant coach of the Perth Wildcats. I mean, they had Bryce Cotton on their team, and people are talking about Matt Nielsen standing there with a clipboard. I'm sure he's a fine assistant coach, but really? I know he's a boomer. Going back to Andrew Bogut, I've always got anger from him rather than ego. Some people think he carries himself with his great ego. I don't really get that. I get anger from Andrew Bogut instead. In Matt Logue's book, Hoop Dreams Down Under, by the way, available on Booktopia. Definitely go and have a look. Really good read. Matt Logue writes about the bullying at school and the taking of the bus around Carrum. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's in Victoria, Melbourne. And how Andrew Bogut was taking the bus to school and taking it with junkies, and they just scored and they're looking to steal from him. The quote from the book is, Bogut realized the world was cruel, which I guess is true, but a lot of people are afraid to kind of say that and put that in print. If that's your mindset, you can see where it happens. In that same book, Matt Logue writes how Andrew Bogut was done with school after high school and just wanted to play basketball at the NBL with the Victoria Titans. He was about to put pen to paper, but Brian Gorgian said no and shipped him on to Utah, citing that he was set for bigger and better things. Yet sprinkled on some of this sort of good fortune and obviously the fame and the money, on top of it is all this anger. But then again, sprinkled on top of that anger is, Bogut donating $30,000 to help the Sydney Spirit stay afloat when they were a mess after changing their name from the Kings folded and West Sydney Razorbacks changed to the Spirit and no one was at their games and Gorgian was terrified at the league or just really annoyed at the state of the league. And, that was the year that the South Dragons won. Gorgian left the league pretty much and didn't come back for a decade. Bogut comes in as the saviour of that team. The amount is quoted at $30,000. Could have been more. I don't know. Really interesting career on Andrew Bogut. I really hope he plays in the NBL next season. I'd be leaning towards not. I think, I don't know, it's really hard to say, but I'd be leaning towards not. I think when you're that age and had the injuries that he's had, and I think there'd be a joy in not playing basketball anymore. But I would like to see him return for my own selfishness. Sydney have got a chip on their shoulder after, their exit from the finals. And that's not the way you want to end it for Bogut or anyone else. I keep coming back to this. If I had to use three words to describe Andrew Bogut's career, both internationally, NBA and NBL, I guess the three I'd go with are resilient, vengeful, and good. And I hope anyone listening, or indeed if Andrew Bogut's listening, doesn't take those as hurtful. I mean, he was one of the few bigs out of this country who really looked to finish at the rim strong. Can't really think of other guys who did it. There are others, but Bogut, I mean, in the Olympics, I'd love to see a dunk tally on how many Bogut dunks he committed at the Athens Games. He was going at the rack real hard. He played angry, vengeful. And then got hurt, but showed this resiliency. I mean, he snapped his arm off. It's incredible that he kept playing. He had a good career. Injuries played a huge factor of it. What did he play? 66% of his games. That when you miss that many games, that's tough. If I had to sum up his career in a song, I'd go with the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want. But as Andrew Bogut's career goes, you do get what you need. That's it for the podcast this week. Pretty lean. Again, Booktopia, if you're in the mood to buy a book, go down to the link, click there. That is it from me. Thank you very much. See you next time.